Hey everybody, thanks for joining me for this little interview here with a new friend that I met online through Vance, another guy we interviewed a couple weeks ago. This is the director of the movie Occupants, and he is joining me, and he is...
Russ Emanuel.
There we go. What's going on, man?
Hey, thank you for having me on.
Oh, no problem. Like I was telling you earlier before we started recording, I watched the movie today. I watched a preview copy because I'm special, and it was fantastic. It was great.
Thank you.
First question is, how did you get Robert Picardo in it?
Well, Robert Picardo and I, we've made, I guess, 5 projects together.
Oh, really?
Including Occupants, yeah. He is friends with the producer, Howard Nash. And without Howard Nash, I would not be making a film like Occupants. So basically, what happened was I made my first feature film in 2006 to 7. Mm-hmm. That's when we filmed it. And it was produced by Howard Nash, called PJ, and he offered me the directing gig, right?
Yeah.
And John Hurd, the Home Alone dad, was already attached. And because he was attached, so was Robert Picardo, Vincent Pastore, Halle Keith Eisenberg, and on and on. That's how I met Bob Picardo in the first place. And then we worked together on Chasing the Green, my second film I directed.
Mm-hmm.
That one has Jeremy London, Ryan Hurst, and William Devane, and Robert Picardo.
Nice.
And then we did a third one called The Legends of Nathaya.
Mm-hmm.
And that one, he was in a main starring role. And he plays this like grandfather who tells his grandson a bedtime story, a fantasy story, to help his grandson decide whether to live with mom or dad who are separating. So mm-hmm. it's kind of like a Princess Bride type film.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. And then we did a documentary called Restoration of Paradise. He was the narrator for it, which is really funny because it was kind of an in-joke in the fifth project, which is Occupants. And I guess that's why I'm on, right?
Yes, exactly. we can talk about whatever. You know, it's all geeky stuff.
Yeah. You see, as a director, I like, you know, to put in in-jokes. So basically, you know, if you remember, he was referencing a documentary about the wetlands.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what the documentary was, called
cool.
Restoration of Paradise. So he was kind of like referencing himself.
Oh, nice. Yeah, that's cool.
It's an in-joke.
Nice. And for those of you out there listening who don't know who Robert Picardo is, he was the doctor on Star Trek Voyager.
Yeah.
So, because there's some people out there who don't
know
those things.
He was also Johnny Cab in Total Recall, the original, the good version.
The good one, yeah. Nice.
So that's how I know Bob Picardo.
Nice. So, Occupants, great movie. Where did the, you didn't write it, correct?
No, I did not write it. It was written by a Writers Guild of America writer. Her name is Julia Camera.
Oh, nice. It's an awesome premise and idea. I mean, without spoiling the movie, you could kind of give people a clue of what it's about.
Yeah, it's about this young couple named Annie and Neil Curtis, and Annie's a documentarian. And she decides to do this 30 days clean living documentary, kind of like a reverse Super Size Me.
Mm-hmm.
And she sets up cameras all over her house. Now, over those 30 days, they start capturing, the footage starts capturing a parallel version of themselves, living in the same house, but they look different, but it's still them, you
right.
know? And at first, it's just like found footage, and it's just a curiosity. And they consult with Dr. Alan Peterson of the Peterson Research Institute, played by Robert Picardo. And he says, yeah, just watch, because, you know, you can't interact with them. Now, over time, it becomes science fiction because portals start opening up, and they're able to interact. Then it becomes... without spoiling it, pure horror.
Oh yeah, it's great.
It just veers into the horrific.
Yeah.
Now, the reason I love this script, though, it's a psychological piece. I mean, it's literally, if you think about it, let's say you yourself, right, Rick,
mm-hmm.
are a good person, right? I assume you're a good person.
I think I am.
A good person. But what if your parallel version is a psychopath?
Right.
Does that mean that you can be a psychopath?
Right, is the option there that
yeah.
maybe if something else happened in my life when I was growing up, I would be that type of person?
Exactly, and that's what happens in this film. So our main characters, Annie and Neil Curtis, they're great people. They have the ideal job, you know, they own their home and, you know, they just love their life. Mm-hmm. The parallel versions are the exact opposite. They're dark, they're brooding, you know, they hate their jobs, they hate each other, mm-hmm. you name it. And so it's like, and when they start doing things in the film, and I cannot spoil this, of course, but let's say it goes into horrific. So there are like psychopathic tendencies, if you will. So basically then Annie Curtis starts doubting not only herself, but her spouse. Because they're like, wait a minute, if my parallel version can do that and your parallel version did that to me, then you're going to do that to me too. And that's why I love this script, because it's a psychological piece. It's all about, you know, who can you trust?
Exactly.
And I just think it's brilliant. So Julia Camara, she wrote this script, and the producer, Howard Nash, he optioned it from her around February 2014. Mm-hmm. Because he looks for scripts. That's what he does, you know, because he's the producer.
Right.
So he found a script. He says, this is great, you know. It's a found footage film in one location with two main actors, if you think about it. And it can be done for cheap.
Yeah, and it's what, like, is it four rooms, five rooms? Four cameras, right?
Oh, what is it? I don't know. How many rooms were there? There's a living room, dining room, kitchen. That's where the cameras were set up. We see the bedroom.
Yeah.
Picardo actually shot on set, too, in front of a green screen.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was in the bedroom. Of course, we took out the bed and everything.
Oh, yeah.
And then, you know, we made it look like he was in Sri Lanka.
Supposedly. Yeah.
he was in L.A.
Right. That's awesome. Yeah,
but it was fun, you know. It was a very tight shoot. We shot for 10 days in September, October 2014. He was on day four, and we called it Picardo Day.
Nice.
He was actually there for just half a day. You see, by this time, I know how to work with him. You know, I know what he wants to do. I know exactly, you know, how he works. So I know he likes to prep with the other actors while he's in makeup wardrobe, and that's what happened, you know. And then I know he likes to, flex the script so that it becomes more natural. So that's what he did. You know, he changed certain words. He asked Russ, is this good? I'm like, yeah, that's fine, you know. So we spent 30 minutes doing that on Picardo Day. And then we shot his scenes, and it was really funny because the other actors, Brianna White and Michael Pagliacci, who plays Annie and Neil Curtis, they were not on, you know, they were literally, they were there when they were, when Picardo was saying his lines, because I wanted the most natural performance. But obviously, they weren't quote-unquote there with him, if you think about it. You know, he's on a webcam, they're also on a webcam. So
exactly.
They're supposedly, like, what, halfway around the world.
Right. Well, I mean, just look at us. We're on each side of the country over Skype.
yeah, exactly. And you know, I mean, in 2016, you could actually do this. Now, what was funny is because, you know, he was shooting in the bedroom, right?
Yeah.
There wasn't a lot of space in that room. So the actors had to go into the closet.
Oh, really?
They literally were in the closet.
Nice.
It was very funny. So they were in the closet saying their lines so that, you know, they could help Picardo. With the performance. It was really amusing. You know, there really wasn't any room. I couldn't even go in there. I had to, they had to set up Video Village. It was Video Village, which is the monitor that the director looks at. And they had to set it up in the adjoining room, basically. So,
nice.
You know, I couldn't even go in there.
Yeah, that's a small
there
bedroom.
There was no room.
It's there a tiny little bedroom, then.
No, it was very tiny, but you know, it was an incredible house. I love the house. I mean, it's just so photogenic, and that's why I was so happy that we got the house. I'm telling you, that house was like a gold mine. It was beautiful.
Nice.
And I think it really helped sell the film.
Yeah. Oh, the film felt very very homey. It felt like, you know, natural.
Well, you know, a lot of that also is my crew, like Tatiana Kolonoff, the production designer. We decided in pre-production, which is, you know, what happens before you start shooting, you prep, right? So we decided the look of the real world versus the parallel world. We made use of what was in the house, They had a detached garage, and they had a lot of stuff in there, which they said that we can use. So we did that. I also brought my own stuff, from my own storage, mm-hmm. and she did the same. So, for instance, we decided in the real world, everything's colorful. You know, everything is kind of angular. Not angular, I'm sorry. It's smooth edges and, you know, just feels nice. But the parallel world, it's darker. It's angular. You know, it's sharp. It's kind of brittle, that kind of look. You know, with the DP, Emil Harris, director of photography, who was also the editor. And Emil, just FYI, Emil Harris and I, we've made films since 2002. Oh, so nice. He is my filmmaking partner. Without him, none of this would be happening either. So just want to give a shout out to him. But he and I decided on the look, you know, real world, everything's colorful, but the parallel world, we put a green filter.
Yeah, it was very kind of grim looking.
It was grim, like, you know, it kind of reminds me of The Matrix, to be honest.
Yeah, it was like a greenish, Yeah, it was cool.
But that's what, you know, we prepped this. Nina Minnelli, costume designer, same thing, you know, real couple, they wear nice, you know, colorful outfits, parallel couple, it's like monochromatic, you know, it's black, silver, everything's rigid, mm-hmm. you know. Alicia Vigiones, the makeup artist, same thing, you know, makeup for the real couple versus the parallel couple. And by the way, that's another thing. The real couple, they have, she has blonde hair, right? She's a natural blonde, Brianna White. And he grew out his beard, Michael Pagliacci, for 3 months. So obviously we shot them first. Mm-hmm. We shot them for the first 7 days. Yep. And then what happens is they transformed to their parallel versions. And their parallel versions, he just went to the barber. And he became this military grunt look, you know. Yep. He shaved it all off. And it's a dramatic transformation, but he had it easy. She, on the other hand, had to do a 5-hour dye job.
She had to change her hair color.
It took several tries. The first try, it became silver.
Oh, really?
And Alicia was very instrumental in getting that look, so that's why I wanted a shout out to Alicia, because she made basically Parallel Annie is a brunette. Mm-hmm. And so we had to make it look like a natural brunette color, right?
Right. And you don't want it to look
She was able to pull it out and pull it off, if you will. So, you know, I mean, it just worked. It takes this crew. I mean, I can go on. The first AD, Clifford Brakefield, he was the one who, you know, dealt with making sure we're on schedule mm-hmm. every day. I mean, he was great, you know. Jennifer Durst, our production manager, who also played a hand double. And, okay, I'm going to get a little, this is not an F-bomb, but this is a little funny, amusing anecdote. Okay, she played the hand double, right? She played, her hand structure was similar to Brianna's. And there are, and this is, again, maybe a little bit in the spoiler area, zone, if you will, but I got to tell the story. So, you know, she interacts, quote unquote, she's Parallel Annie's hand, basically, and she interacts with real Annie.
Yeah,
in some scenes in the film. So she is what we call evil hands. That's her
evil credit. Hands. Nice.
Yeah, evil hands, which is a very very funny title. That who came up with that? His name was Edward Alba. Nice. He came up with it. He was one of the key production assistants. So Edward, thank you for that, because that's a really cool name. Now remember, when you're shooting a film, it's like, what, 10 to 12 hours every day, and we were shooting 10 consecutive days. We shot that scene with the hands like on day 8 or 7, somewhere around there, right?
Yeah.
So by then, you know, it was, you know, we're all stressed, it's tiring. So, of course, I'm like Mr. Magoo at this point, you know, kind of absent-minded. So after she did this one scene with her hand, right? And it was perfect. I said, okay, I was like this, just matter of fact. Thanks, Jen. Nice hand job. And then everybody started laughing. I'm going, what? What? They're like, hand job. I'm like, oops. Like,
oh, yeah. Gotcha.
But then, you know, I really was commending. She did a really good hand job.
Nice. Yeah, and it doesn't give any spoilers away, but you can see her hand job on the poster for Occupants.
You can see her hand job on the poster and also in the trailer, too.
In
the trailer. Was it in the trailer? Yeah, you can see her hand in the trailer. She picks up the pail.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. So it's in there. Yeah. But nice. But he did a really good job. I mean, look, we had a great cast. We had a great crew. It just worked. It really worked. And I there's this one shot, and this is when I knew we had it. It's what I call the money shot. And I don't really want to spoil it, but I will say that it's a scene where real Annie and parallel Annie interact. It's the only thing I will say.
Oh, yeah. I remember which scene that is.
Yeah. It took 5 hours to do that scene.
Oh, I'm and sure.
If it didn't work, and when I say 5 hours, it's like we shoot the real Annie, right, with her blonde hair. Then she did her dye job, which took 5 hours. And then we did parallel Annie. Now, for those 5 hours, I literally couldn't do anything because we had to wait for the dye job. It was the worst time of my life because I didn't know. Let's say if you know the term force majeure, it's a legal term called – it's basically act of God. That's what they call it. And it means that if there's an earthquake or a flash flood or, you know, just any of that, then they won't cover it, the insurance companies. So what if an earthquake, knock on wood – had happened, you know. Then what happens is the cameras, it becomes a hot set. Hot set is nobody can go in there and touch anything. The camera can't move, nothing, because we have to.
Because it's going to be identical.
Yeah, it has to be exactly identical. So if anything had happened in those 5 hours, anything, then the shot would have been ruined.
He must have been.
That's why I was nervous. Yeah, it was. I was incredibly nervous because we literally couldn't do anything. Yeah. I was watching Galaxy Quest on my phone with the crew because we couldn't do anything.
Right
now,
that shot's in the trailer, correct? I think that
shot is not in the trailer. No.
Well, for some reason, I thought it was.
No, not this one. This is the money shot. Okay. There's another one though with fire, but this.
Okay.
Yeah. And my associate producer, who, by the way, we're doing a comic book tie-in, and he's handling it. There's a comic book. It's not a copy of the film. It's actually an original story. We're doing that separately. And you can go to our website, occupantsthemovie.com, and you can see a link there. But, yeah, he's the one who was also the behind-the-scenes videographer. So what he did was he shot Video Village at a monitor. And he shot the performances of real Annie. Then he shot the performances of parallel Annie. Then he gave that to me. I had my laptop. I had my editing software. I put it together. And it was like take two and take four of the real and the parallel. And when I put it together, and of course it was very quick. It was a mock.
Yeah.
But it worked. And I could see it worked. Nice. And that's when I knew. And I was like yelling to the heavens, going, yes! I was really giddy. I was so happy. I knew we had a movie at that point.
Oh, yeah. And that scene, like, you can't even, it looks great. You can't even tell that it's, the effects-wise, it looks real. It looks like it was like two people. Oh, yeah, it was great.
No, I was so happy. I mean, it just worked. I mean, look, Sean Fahimian, our post-sound guy, he put in a lot of the sound design. I mean, without him, I don't think the film would be as good as it is, because he's really good with cleaning up dialogue, adding sound effects. If you notice, in a parallel world, he added a hum.
Yeah,
it's very subtle.
Yeah,
but he wanted to, and this was his idea. He's like, Russ, I want to distinguish the parallel and the real world.
Right. Yeah, and you got to make it different. And I like that the camera, like when they were watching the footage, it jumps between it. It's not like just like straight up footage that they're watching. Like it flashes back and forth and stuff.
You know why though?
Why?
Because the cameras are static for the most part. So and the writer had this question. It's like, Russ, what are you gonna cut to? Because if you have to edit, right, let's say the performances, we had to cut, because they couldn't hold the performance for the whole scene. They're like, what do you cut to? I'm like, well, the parallel world. it was used as a glue.
Oh, nice.
To kind of stitch together some editing. But, of course, it worked, too, at the same time. Because you want to flash the parallel world. And we played with that, too. So, if you notice, like, when there's this one scene that she sends a note, then it glitched right away to the parallel world. Then you see the note in the parallel living room, basically, and it glitched back to the real living room.
Yeah.
So we toyed with this, and there's other stuff, and you've seen the film, so you know what I'm talking about, where I try to put in scare tactics. When you see the parallel world, you're like, oh my god, what is she doing there like that?
Exactly.
That's what we tried to do. And all that was, a lot of it was visual effects. You know, we hired this company called Screen Arts VFX out of Bangalore, India.
Oh, cool.
And they were able to do like 3D modeling because I wanted something fantastic for the portal.
Yeah.
And they worked on films like 300 Rise of an Empire.
Nice.
And Life of Pi. So that's why I, you know, and by the way, the reason we outsourced, it was cheaper.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure. I mean, that's why everyone outsources. But I was going to say that the portal effects, like, it's not like you have a visual representation of the portal, but the stuff that goes in the portal, like, it just kind of, like, folds in itself. It looked great.
Well, thank you. We tried to, what was the inspiration? Interstellar?
Okay, yeah.
You know, the wormhole.
Yeah.
Everything was inverted. So that was, you know, that was my inspiration. And basically they asked for photos of a representation of the rooms where the portal was coming so that they can put the reflection onto the effect.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
That
so
way
it's very
it didn't
subtle.
Feel like it was something that was dropped in there.
No, they were really, we were very specific. Now, you know, I was mentioning I was 2016 and, you know, the reason I mention that, I don't think I could have worked with a company like them in, let's say, 1996, because I don't think the technology was, you know, good enough. Like, you know, video files, you know, visual effects files, they're huge. They're really big. So now we can, like, use Dropbox or WeTransfer to send 2 gigabyte files, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Back
well, you
then you'd have to sell. You'd have to send like a film reel cross country and stuff. And
yeah, it's just not possible. You know, a lot of like Facebook, social media didn't exist back then. Not in the sense that we have it today.
Right.
And that helped with like we raised money on Indiegogo. And, you know, a lot of it was through Facebook and the interaction. You know, I met Vance through another friend. His name is Jeffrey Ferguson of Jeff Trek. Mm-hmm. And again, I met them on Facebook. And then I met Vance. And then I met you. You see?
Exactly. And that's how I'm meeting all these people, too, is all through Facebook.
Facebook's great. I, by the way, when I did my first feature film, it was MySpace.
Oh,
that's how old I am.
Ow. So listen, yeah, I had a MySpace too, man.
No, I mean it's you know technology is just amazing. Look, with my composer Vasilis Melesis, again, without his music, I don't think the film would be what it is.
Oh, yeah, the music is great for setting up tension and stuff, and
Well, guess what? I'm going to meet him for the first time at the Florida SuperCon, which we're going to be at in July 1st through 4th, because he and his wife live in Miami. But when I was working with him, he was living in Spain.
Oh.
Yes. So I was working with people in Spain. We recorded the score through a guy named Andrew Miranda. We did an orchestra recording with it's called a $99 Orchestra out of Lisbon, Portugal. So I was working with Portugal, Spain, India, and then we hired another guy named Mark Bonafé out of the Philippines. So I was working with I was working with that, and my producer's out of New York. Yeah, so you know my time zones were all screwed up. I was on call like a doctor.
Yeah,
you know, we recorded the score at 2 p.m. in Lisbon, which was like 6 a.m. my time. It's just it was hectic, you know.
Nice.
But you know, I love this. I love making films. We worked 2 years on Occupants. So
nice.
I just think it's fascinating. It's like Legos. I love Legos, right? It's like building something.
Oh yeah. Building something is great.
And it takes a collaboration. I love working with Howard, Harris, Vasilis, you name it. You know, all the people that I give a shout out to with the actors, with Picardo. And then, you know, right now we're doing the publicity phase, you know, with yourself. So again, thank you for having me on.
Oh, not a problem at all, man.
We were just at the Phoenix Comic Con Film Festival. We won second place best of the festival there.
Oh, awesome.
You don't know how we were so grateful because, you know, I'm answerable to my producer, to our investors, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, they're like, okay, you know, tell us how it goes. I'm like, ooh, I'm nervous.
yeah, you have.
And when they announced that we won, you know, the second place, you know, out of like, was 177 films.
Nice.
It was like, wow. I was like, to be honest, I was breathing a sigh of relief.
Yeah, that's great, man.
And, you know, I'm in Phoenix. We're going to, not Phoenix, we were at Phoenix. They had, 100,000 people there.
Wow.
In 115 degree temperature, by the way.
This is ridiculous.
But, you know, they treated us well. The festival director, Jacob O'Neill, and his team were just incredible. And now we're going to go to Florida SuperCon. We're going to have 3 screenings there. We're going to have 2 panels. And Robert Picardo himself will be showing up.
Oh, nice.
To help rep the film. And then we're at Shore Leave. It's called Shore Leave 38. It's a Star Trek run. It's a private run Star Trek convention. Mm-hmm. And that's July 15th through 17th. We're in the film festival there. And then the big one for us is San Diego.
Yeah.
The San Diego Comic Con. We're in the film festival. It's called the Comic Con International Independent Film Festival.
Nice.
For anybody out there who doesn't know, San Diego Comic Con is the original one. That is the granddaddy of Comic Cons. In fact, they're just called Comic Con.
Oh, really?
That's their name. It's not San Diego Comic Con. I only say that so that people, you know, because there's so many Comic Cons now, right?
Right. Oh, they're all over the place.
Yeah, but this one last year had 165,000 people. So this is the big enchilada for us. And, mm-hmm. You know, I just got the badges yesterday. We had to register online.
Oh, wow.
But this is it. This is the choice one. The producer's coming. The lead actress is coming. You name it. We're all going to be there.
And, nice.
And it's just surreal. And then we have another one at the Action on Film International Film Festival, which we just found out we got in. And
nice.
That's in September in Los Angeles.
Cool, man.
So that's the publicity phase. And again, it's been a ride. It's been
nice.
A ride.
Now, if people go to occupantsofthemovie.com, they can see the trailer and all the
yeah.
cast and the crew and stuff like that. Now, when is it going to be available for people to watch outside of the con circuit?
Well, right now, the producer, Howard Nash, is dealing with the distributors.
Mm-hmm.
So once we find an ideal distributor, then we will have a better idea.
Yeah, are you guys going to try to look like physical media or like Netflix or?
Well, our previous films, they're on like Amazon Prime, Netflix.
Nice.
Yeah, you could see Chasing the Green on Amazon Prime if you have it.
Nice.
Same thing with Nathaya, I think. So yeah, that for sure we're going to try. For Nathaya, by the way. We also got foreign distribution, right? Well, it turns out we got a theatrical release in Germany as well as a 3D Blu-ray release.
Oh, that's awesome.
Which, you know, the film is not 3D. So I was like scratching my head going, what's going on?
Right, like how did that work?
Robert Picardo is a household name in Germany.
Oh, yeah?
Along with David Hasselhoff.
Yeah, I was going to say him and the Hoff.
So it's like they have a convention there. Called FedCon, I think.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a major Star Trek convention, and he seems to be very popular. So yeah, the producer and I were very surprised because we didn't make that deal. You know, our foreign distributor did.
Right.
And they sell to the territories, and one of them is the German territory. So nice. We were just like, okay, that's pretty cool.
Nice.
So yeah, we are definitely going to be targeting, you know, not just the United States and Canada, which is domestic,
right.
But also the other territories, which is foreign.
Nice.
So as soon as we know, we'll put it on the website. Trust me, we'll be letting everybody know.
Sweet. Now, I would be doing the fans of the show a dissatisfied favor if I didn't ask you about the comic that goes at Occupants. Because, you know, this is geek culture, and it is a comic book. And I know that you did an Indiegogo for it, correct?
We did an Indiegogo for the comic book too. Yeah. Yes,
and is it it's a prequel? It's like a story before the movie. Or?
It's kind of like a midquel, I guess. It takes place during Act 1 and Act 2 of the feature film, so it's like simultaneously happening.
Okay,
with the feature film, and the minor characters in the feature film become major characters in the comic book.
Yeah, I was going to say that the cover of one of the comics, it looks like the guy that you see when they're like scrolling through the internet looking for information about parallel universes.
Exactly, and he plays the son of Dr. Peterson,
Peterson,
which is Robert Picardo's character. So his name is Chris Winters. I want to give a shout out to him because he's co-producer of the film. I felt bad because when I was in Phoenix, which is where he lives, he allowed me to stay with him and his girlfriend, but he was sick. He was sick as a dog.
Really?
And I felt so bad because I wanted him to enjoy the Comic-Con.
Yeah.
And he couldn't do it at all.
Oh, that bites.
So, you know, Chris, I owe you dinner. I owe you coffee. I'm not forgetting. Just next time we meet, I will remember. Anyway, yeah, Chris Winters plays a minor character in the feature film, but he plays a very major character in the comic book. And then Timothy Lee Conley, who's also very instrumental in helping out on the features and my previous films. Anyway, he becomes basically the case study in the comic book, whereas the film is Case 831.
Yep.
That's Annie and Neil Curtis's case. His case is 285.
Oh, yeah, I thought that was cool. It was like world building with that, just having that high of a case number. It shows that it's a large phenomenon.
Well, case 831 is a special case, of course.
Well, yes, of course.
This is when the interactions start happening. Before then, it hasn't literally happened, or they don't know whether it happened. If you read the comic book, you'll understand. But basically, the reason I did the comic book is because of Eric Kask. I mentioned him before. He used to run the Phoenix Comic Con film festival a long time ago. Not a long time ago. I don't want to say that. But when I got my short film called Girl with Gun into there, that's where I met him about 10 years ago. And we've been friends ever since. And he's the one who suggested the comic book because he knows all the artists, including Dave Beatty, who draws for DC Marvel Comics. And Dave decided that he wanted to join the project.
Nice.
So Dave, thank you. And then Al Sparrow, our letterer, who's actually, I hired him. Well, we hired him during the Phoenix Comic Con to do a variant art cover, it's called. So, you know, Al, shout out to you too. And, you know, Eric, again, is the one who was instrumental in making this happen. So I wrote the story because I know the feature film, and I know what we can do, what we can't, basically, you know, because it had to be very subtle. You cannot give away what happens in the feature film, but at the same time, you have to make the comic book exciting.
Right, exactly.
And that's why I had to write it. For future sequels, somebody else could write it. It's perfectly fine. But, yeah, basically, you know, Eric's like, Russ, you know, with the comic book, you could have explosions and battles. And since we're trying to get the anime crowd, put Japan in there somehow. So what happens in Case 285 is they see this other parallel world where the British still own America. So it's British California. And you see a flag and it has 20 stars. That means there's 20 colonies. Now they're being attacked by the Imperial Japanese Nazi German forces.
Yep.
In 2016.
Oh, that's Remember, cool.
They're in sleek jets.
Yeah, like, I was gonna say, I'm looking at one of the pictures, like the cover. It looks like Big Ben with like stealth jets flying behind it almost.
Exactly. Because in this universe the British still own America, and the Nazi Japanese, they won the war.
Ah.
So that's where we brought in the Japanese for the anime thing, because Eric's like, you've got to bring in Japan somehow. I'm like, okay. Remember, I'm half Japanese and half white.
Yeah.
So I understand this, you know, whole, like, by the way, this dichotomy, as you will. You know, I sometimes have a culture clash myself, you know. But, yeah, he's like, you got to bring in Japan. I'm like, okay. So we did that. And, you know, we have, you'll see it. There's explosions, you know, there's portals and you get transported and it'll be pretty cool. It's going to be 24 pages.
Nice.
The artist has drawn, about 14 pages
of it.
And it should be ready in August. We're going to have a release party somewhere. I'm targeting either Tucson or Long Beach, California.
Nice.
Tucson, Arizona.
Is it going to be physical and digital, or just physical?
Yes.
Or
yes. In fact, people could still get it if you want. You just go to occupantsthemovie.com and you'll see a link to the campaign. And this is something weird. Okay, we raised 218%, right? Mm-hmm. Which, you know, I'm very, very grateful that we reached 100%, and then
they kept going,
118%. So yeah. But they have this new feature called In Demand. And in the In Demand phase, you could still get the perks.
Oh, really?
You can't just donate money, but you can get the perks and whatever perks are still available. Nice. So somebody just bought, this is a friend of mine. Her name is Tree. Thank you, Tree. But she bought 5 more physical copies of the comic book.
Nice. Yeah, I'm looking at the Indiegogo right now. There's a bunch of stuff that's sold out, too.
Yeah, you know, and whatever's sold out, of course, you cannot get. But whatever's not sold out, you can still get. So people could still purchase the comic book.
Yeah, I mean,
so we're gonna have a first run, and it's not. We're not trying to really sell it. We're trying to promote the feature film, and we're trying to see if there's demand. Because if there is, then we'll do a sequel to the comic book or a sequel to the film. You know, some people are talking about TV series or web series or, you know.
Oh, yeah. I mean, with that many cases, too, I mean, it could be a huge world thing.
Well, that's what I wanted to do. You know, I wanted to expand the story. And you know what? There's a theory. It's the multiverse theory. Basically, there are infinite number of universes.
Oh, yeah. And being a comic book nerd, people in comics hear that multiverse stuff all the time. But people who aren't really into comics, it's not really a huge thing. Yeah. So it's almost like new territory. I mean, there was back in the day, there was evil Spock and evil Kirk and stuff, you know. You just throw a goatee on them, they're evil, right?
Yeah. Hey, wait, really?
Yeah.
Didn't we do that for Occupants?
Nope.
But I thought it was fascinating how, you know, Star Trek explored the parallel world, basically. Mm-hmm. And they actually continued that into Deep Space Nine.
Yeah, they did.
And I think also of Star Trek Enterprise. They did two episodes in season 4. That explored that too. So I thought I loved it. I thought it was very fascinating. But think about it. Why just one parallel world?
Right. It's infinite.
Yeah. That means that even if a character dies, they have an infinite number of replacements.
Exactly. And it's like if you think of any big time in your life where you made a decision like, oh, I'm going to go to college for graphic design or film. If you made the other option, that's a parallel universe version of you.
Exactly.
The other option. And then when you're a kid and when you're an adult, and there's just so many options with that.
Well, you know, in Jurassic Park, Ian Malcolm, the Jeff Goldblum character, mm-hmm. was mentioning chaos theory.
Yeah.
So you can drop a, you know, was it a little pool of water?
Yeah.
And then it'll run down your... Was the hand, right?
Yeah, it ran down
in
his
one
hand
direction,
and down his fingers.
But you do it again in the same position and it goes in another direction. So there are so many possibilities. I bet you there's infinite numbers of you, of me, you know.
Oh,
some
yeah.
good, some bad, you know. I don't know. You just name it. I mean, I'm sure it's a very credible theory.
Oh, yes, definitely. I'm looking at the Indiegogo right now. It's $5. People can get a digital copy. That's pretty sweet.
You can get a digital copy. You can get a combination of digital and physical still for $15.
Yeah.
I mean, if you want, it's out there for people.
Yeah,
so.
See that. Nice.
Yeah.
Cool. So why don't you tell everyone where they can go to find all of your stuff and, you know, they can check out your things and your past movies too.
Okay. Well, you know, we mentioned the website for Occupants. That's occupantsthemovie.com. Occupants is plural.
Mm-hmm.
So occupantsthemovie.com. Through there, there's links to everything, basically. You can see the trailer, the comic book. We have a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff. By the way, we're going to have about 90 minutes of behind-the-scenes video.
Awesome.
And this is, of course, for the distributor.
Right.
They're going to ask for this. So we have all that. And you can see a lot of the photos of our previous events, like Phoenix Comic Con. Now, my site is Russem Productions, and that's R-U-S-S-E-M, M as in Mary,
mm-hmm.
.com, Russem. That's a combination of my name, Russ Emanuel.
Nice.
And if you go just to the first page, you can see links to my previous films right there. Girl with Gun, Restoration of Paradise, PJ, Chasing the Green, The Legends of Nathaya, and of course, Occupants.
Mm-hmm.
And even future projects, there's one that I'm attached. It's kind of a horror film that we're shooting in Ohio next summer.
Yeah.
It's called The Dollhouse. And I'm going to give a shout out to producer Julie DeLosio. And I hope I did not butcher her name. But yes, that's we're in the early stages right now. In fact, Emil Harris, our DP editor, he's also a writer. So he's fleshing out the script right now.
Nice.
So it's like a treatment. But, you know, I mean, it's like where we want to shoot. It's in Macedonia, Ohio. And they never shoot films there. So, and Julie, she's kind of like, she's like an administrator for this site. And she communicates with the mayor and a lot of the locals there. And the demand is there.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I attach myself to the project. Also, nice. The locations are incredible. Ohio is incredible. I'm sure New Hampshire is too, but Ohio.
We're very, well, where I live in New Hampshire, it's all mountains and trees. Like, I can cross the street from my house and hike up a mountain. Like,
well, that must be nice. Look, it's, I guess because, you know, I'm so used to LA, I'm just, you know, we're in the desert here.
Oh, yeah.
So everything is pale. All the trees, you know, yeah, we have palm trees and all. And the weather's nice, but everything's pale because it's a desert kind of look, you know? But you go to New Hampshire or Ohio, everything's lush and green.
Oh, yeah.
It's just beautiful. I used to live in Oregon, and I love that look and the smell and everything. You know, you smell nature.
Yep. Especially after it rains.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we don't get rain here. I mean, in fact, we were in a drought.
Oh, really?
For a good year, yeah. Our governor, you know, he put us officially into a drought condition. So.
Wow.
I think it was lifted now, but last year it was bad.
Wow.
So, yeah, I remember going to an event in Northern California, like middle Northern California around Chico, and I was driving up the 5 freeway. The 5, I think it was the 5. And that's a major interstate highway in California. And, yeah, I saw everything was parched. It was brown, dying. It looked bad.
Yeah, I'm sure.
That's when I realized we're in a drought.
That's crazy. Yeah, I've never experienced that type. We get flood warnings here.
Wow, that must be fun.
Yeah, too much water. We'll ship to you.
Look, I love the East Coast. We shot PJ and Chasin and Green in New York.
Mm-hmm.
My brother, he actually went to Brown University in Providence, Rhode Island. So I visited Rhode Island before. And nice. I think we accidentally... I went to Boston, yeah. I went to Boston.
Oh, nice. Yeah, Boston's cool. Boston's about 3.5 hours away from me, I believe.
Okay. I know, you know, like California, you know, I think... Is it the second largest state? I can't remember.
I believe so, because I think Texas is the largest. I think California's second, yeah.
I think, yeah. So in order to get to another state, you have to, like... To get to Arizona, you have to travel about 3 hours or 4 hours.
Yeah.
And to get to Nevada, you have to travel again about 3 hours, 4 hours. But where you are, like, we accidentally went into Connecticut. Rhode Island. I think it was Connecticut or Massachusetts. But we took the wrong turn. And in Ohio, by the way, in order to get from where I was going there for an event called Rathacon. Rathacon, they were very generous. Shout out to Kelly, the Comic-Con director there, but they were very generous to us. And, you know, they were in Athens, Ohio, which is southern Ohio. And I flew into Cleveland, which is northern Ohio. So, and then shout out to Alan Courtwright, who was a voice actor in the film. He's the one who drove me around. So,
nice.
Alan, thank you. And what happens is we took, I think it was called the 77, and then we had to then shift to the 50. That's what the GPS told us to do, right?
Yeah.
Now, it turns out we had to leave Ohio to then get back into Ohio.
Yeah, it's so weird when states do that with their roads.
It was funny, and we're like, what state are we entering? And it turned out to be West Virginia.
Yeah.
Which looked just like Ohio. So there you go. So, you know, we weren't. And I remember I was like going, we're in West Virginia, which, you know, wasn't part of the plan, right? And I'm like, I got to get a souvenir, right? But we didn't have much time. We were kind of late to get to Athens, where Rathacon was held. That's around Ohio University, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
So we had to stop for gas, and I, you know, at the gas station, I'm like, okay, I'm going to get a souvenir here. Well, it turns out there wasn't anything except a lotto ticket.
Oh.
Which had West Virginia lottery on it.
Nice.
So I bought a $2 lottery ticket as my quote unquote souvenir from West Virginia.
Nice.
And no, I did not win.
Well, I assume. If you would have won, I probably wouldn't be talking to you right now.
Yeah, it would have been amusing if we had won. But no, we didn't win. But that was that's my anecdote. If you go to the Instagram site, which is available through the occupantsthemovie.com website, you can see the Instagram link. You could see I put a video of us leaving Ohio to get into West Virginia, and then another video of us entering Ohio.
Nice.
Which, you know, I mean, I didn't think I was going to be doing that. You know,
right.
I used to like driving to Phoenix. My late grandparents used to live in Sun City, Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
So I was used to the welcome to California, welcome to Arizona signs.
Yeah.
Or like welcome to Nevada. I go to Vegas sometimes. But never welcome to Ohio or welcome to West Virginia.
Right.
So I thought it was kind of funny, and I had to film it, so I did, and I put it on Instagram. So if you want to see that. Yeah, anyway, that's my little amusing and kind of long-winded anecdote. So.
That's cool, man.
There you go.
Well, if you ever want to film something in a lush green nature area, you know where I am.
Oh, no, New Hampshire. I would love to visit New Hampshire. Yeah. You know, it's, look, I love history, right?
Oh, yeah, and it's, collect, you know, one of the 13 original colonies.
Yeah, I collect coins, by the way. Oh, nice. Collect 1 cent coins, and I have a coin from 1793, which is the second year of the mint. The U.S. mint opened in 1792.
Yeah.
Now, it's called a chain cent, and they had 15 links, and at that time there were 15 states. So New Hampshire was one of those links.
Nice.
And I just love history. You know, I would love to make a film during the Revolutionary War era.
Yeah.
I think would be very fascinating. So, you know, I envy you. I mean, we have here, I guess, Spanish missions, mm-hmm. which are very nice. There's San Juan Capistrano,
mm-hmm.
where I think that's the sparrows or the swallows. Every spring they go there, and it's kind of famous. So we have structures from the 18th century.
Nice.
But the fact is, I think you have more in New Hampshire. Than
oh, yeah. We have so many old buildings and, like, haunted-looking buildings and stuff from, like, you know, early colony days still set up. I mean, there's a place, there's a hiking area near me where it just seems like woods, and every now and then you'll see a foundation to nothing, because you're just in the woods. And you research it, and you look, and you find out that there used to be, like, a logging village that lived there, you know? And it's been since destroyed, because it's been, you know, 100, 200 years, and it's just the woods now. It's just a forest, but it's great.
Well, you know, I visited Rome, Italy.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Rome, they really have history there.
Oh, yeah.
They go way back. Now, what's funny is, in order to get to the Roman Empire or Republic era archaeological sites, there's been so much history in Rome that the city kept building on top of itself, right? So you have to go down several flights to get to the 2,000 years ago era. So you have to go through a lot of history. It's really fascinating. And they're trying to build, like, a subway or something, and they have to hire archaeologists because they keep running into, you know, ruins and archaeological finds. So I can only imagine, you know, that must be really ridiculous.
I mean,
so much history.
Created history.
Well, I love history though. So I think the Roman Empire, Republic, it's very fascinating to study them, and the Byzantine Empire, which is a continuation of the Roman Empire. But, you know, getting back to New Hampshire, you know, you have the Revolutionary War. And I was wondering, you know, what was it like to live in that time?
Right.
What was it like to not have air conditioning?
Right.
Maybe it wasn't that good.
Oh, I'm sure. Everyone's just hot, and everyone stinks, you know.
Well, did you see, was it the Paul Giamatti, John Adams miniseries?
Yes.
Yeah, so there was a scene, you know, how we idealize, you know, the signing of the Declaration of Independence.
Yeah.
Well, they made it very realistic, where everything was hot and flies were flying around. They were all sweating. And, you know, it looked very uncomfortable. And
oh,
I think that was reality. Not what we idealized.
They're all wearing powdered wigs and puffy clothes, and it's like 100 degrees outside. You don't have running water.
Yeah, think about that. And the women had to wear corsets. And
oh, yeah.
Oh, gee, it must have been awful.
I mean, back then, the smell was fantastic.
Oh, I bet it was. And, you know, was it running water? I didn't have that. So what? You have, like, chamber pots?
Chamber pots, and you bathe in a barrel, you know?
Yeah.
You just fill a big barrel full of water.
You don't bathe every day, too. That's the thing, you know? You bathe every couple days, maybe.
Yeah, if you're lucky.
If you're lucky, yeah. So I bet, you know, I'm sure you get used to the smell. And, you know, I've been around horses, so I know how horses smell, and they leave behind, you know what, right?
Oh, yeah, exactly.
So, yeah, it's different.
Yeah.
I kind of like having electricity, running water, Western medicine,
I'm a fan.
And you name it. You know, it's kind of nice living in 2016.
Yeah, I'm definitely a fan.
The internet, you know, to travel from the United States to, like, France, like, you know, was it Benjamin Franklin had to do? They had to travel by boat.
Exactly. And it took
weeks.
You know, weeks or months just to get somewhere. And we can fly there in, you know, in a day.
Yeah. Even less if you take, I think do they still have the Concorde?
I think so, yeah.
I mean, that's just, you know, it's amazing in 2016. I bet you, though, in the year, like, 2500, they're going to be like, oh, how antiquated they were in 2016. Yeah. Transporters, and, you know, you could just, you know, go to some place with your mind. And
yeah, everyone's teleporting everywhere.
Exactly. So I bet in 500 years from now, they're going to think that we're in the Dark Ages.
Exactly. So, all right, man. Well, this is where we're going to head out, but okay. I appreciate you coming on. Once again, plug your site, and we'll get out of here.
All right. Well, thank you again, Rick, by the way. I can talk on and on, as you can tell.
Oh, me too. Trust me. We could spend hours doing this.
Yes, but I know all good things must come to an end, to quote the last Star Trek The Next Generation episode.
Exactly. And we can always have you back on again, too. You
know? Well, I appreciate that. I would love to come back on. Anyway, so if you want to see any information about the feature film, where we're screening, the comic book, go to OccupantsTheMovie.com. That's Occupants, plural, TheMovie.com. If you want to see any of my previous films, including where to watch it, go to russem.com. That's RUSSEM as in Mary.com.
Nice. Great, man. All right. Well, everybody listening right now, let's get back to the show.